Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Garrett Wilson. Wow! What a catch! Touchdown, Jets! That kid's amazing. Gibson on the return. Near side. I don't see any flags. Gibson inside the 30. Hits the Jets. And he's going to go! Jets win it! Touchdown, rookie Xavier Gibson. Game over.
Allen has time. Intercepted. Sauce Gardner's got it. Allen tripped up. He could not get past Jermaine Johnson. Oh, look at the speed of Breece Hall. He's done it again. Breece Lightning, 62 yards for the touchdown.
And he's sacked again by Quinnen Williams. What a beast, number 95 for the Jets.
Listen. Thank you.
This is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeJet1. And it is time for midweek news and notes. And so for that, we bring in our friend who covers the Jets and also does some stuff for SI and his own show, Football with Faria. I like the alliteration there, Nick Faria. Nick, thanks for coming back on the show, brother.
Yeah, appreciate it. Appreciate it. I will say, I'll give full credit to my wife for that. She loves the alliteration. And quite frankly, whatever she says goes.
Smart man. You know exactly who to listen to in your life, and it's not random people on Twitter. If you did that, you might end up in a much different place, much worse place, because Twitter is a battleground right now. In fact, Twitter is a battleground pretty much every day when it comes to Aaron Rodgers. I really don't care to talk about the stuff that people are talking about with Aaron Rodgers that has nothing to do with football. So we'll begin with what he did say about football on his last appearance on the Pat McAfee show. I should say also, and we'll see what happens, but I know that Aaron Rodgers is not going to be appearing on McAfee the rest of the season. It's my understanding that normally he only does the regular season. I think this year he was going to do a couple after the regular season. Maybe they're just letting things cool off or something. After that, it's just special appearances here and there until the following season. I assume that he'll be back next year. He may not be on the ESPN portion. He may just be on the YouTube-only portion. From what I hear, McAfee has a portion of his show that is only on the YouTube channel, and it's the one that the fans tend to like the most anyway because it's the most underground or whatever you want to call it. So perhaps that's what happens, and he's not on ESPN's airwaves anymore. But regardless, beyond any of that, let's talk about what he said in his last appearance on the McAfee show, football related. He did have some interesting things to say, if not anything shocking.
Yeah, nothing really overblown to me, Scott. I will say I do like the fact that he kind of walked back his comments regarding the everyone's going to be on the hot seat this year, because I felt that if Rodgers is going to say that, without Woody talking, without it being publicly known, there's obviously some different things that can be insinuated. You know, you don't want to have your quarterback saying everyone's, you know, going to be tested and everyone's on the hot seat. Everyone knows that the Jets are in a make or break year for 2024. That this is not going to be surprising to anyone. But I do like the fact that he is consistently has asked the fan base to remain patient. Because I think that is the right message to have going into next year. As bad of a season 2023 became, and as rough as it was in so many different aspects, they finished 7-10. They weren't 5-12. They weren't 3-14. They were about as below average as you're going to get with teams that lose franchise quarterbacks. And the fact that they got to seven wins is not just a testament to how good the defense is, but to how good this roster really is overall. They obviously need more weapons. They need a better offensive line, but the pieces are there for them to take that next step. And the one thing that I continuously take away from Rodgers, and I know Nathaniel Hackett has talked about it all year, Robert Saleh has talked about it all year, but his measure of positivity is just so apparent. You know, last week when the sky was falling and no one knew what was going to happen, he went on McAfee and just calmed everything down and said, this is what we're going to fix. We're obviously not going to the playoffs, but next year we're going to be a lot better because we're going to fix the things that need to be fixed. It was just a level of composure, a level of calmness that you rarely see in New York sports and New York media that I think plays so well to what this fan base needs.
I will say, Nick, I think the roster is in worse shape than you do, and I do think these guys should be on the hot seat. Whether Aaron Rodgers should be saying it or not is another story, but I think they absolutely should be on the hot seat. They now know that it's definitely a possibility, and a strong one, that Rodgers could get hurt and miss significant playing time. They weren't prepared for it this year. They better be prepared for it next year. There are clearly things to fix, as Rodgers himself said, the offensive line and the wide receivers slash tight ends, however you want to classify them, pass catchers, certainly the biggest on the team. They have got to fix that, and they've got a lot more work to do than they thought they did going into this season. So if they fix it satisfactorily and either Rodgers stays healthy or they have a tenable backup plan in case he doesn't, great. But if things fall apart again next year, like they did this year, and let's make no mistake about it, a fair amount of those wins were kind of fluky. We know that. They're not repeatable wins. So to expect something like that again next year with the same roster, I think would be foolish. We'll see what they do here in the offseason. One thing they absolutely have to do, though, as we said, Nick, if they're going to be able to make a real push next season, is they have got to improve the pass catchers around Garrett Wilson. You hope that Alan Lazard is better than he was this year. Very low bar to clear, by the way. Let's be honest about that. But you hope that Rodgers coming back and that chemistry between the two of them helps elevate Lazard at least a little bit, but they've got to do more. That was something that Garrett Wilson seemed to be very frustrated about for this year in his year-end comments. He backtracked a little bit during his appearance on the Michael Kay show. Also, another bit of news with Garrett Wilson. It looks like he's going to be going back to his college number, number 5. It was handed off by Thomas Morstead, who's an impending free agent. If he comes back, which I think most of us hope he will be wearing a different number. So Garrett Wilson had some comments that were a little bit softer on the Michael Kay show. And now he also knows that he's getting the number 5 to wear again. So, of course, people are wondering who will wear number 17. A lot of speculation about Devontae Adams. I'm not so sure that's going to happen, but we'll see. But he will not be number 17 next year. It'll be somebody else. He will be number 5.
Yeah, you know, with Garrett Wilson, it's very interesting because I truly feel that he is a player that gets it. And when I say gets it, media market of New York, the fan base is as riled up as they've ever been. And he is consistently the professional, consistently the, hey, I'm frustrated. We all know we're frustrated. This isn't anything against anybody. I just want to win. It's all about winning. I'm not asking for targets. I'm asking for wins. And you've seen that throughout the year where his professionalism and leadership continue to shine when things just kept going worse and worse and worse. So Garrett Wilson is a fundamental piece to this puzzle for the Jets. They drafted him with the 10th overall pick last year. It has been a godsend and should give people a little bit of optimism going into this draft because they have the 10th overall pick. But when it comes to Wilson, it comes to this receiving room, they absolutely need a top pass catcher. They don't need a depth signing. They don't need a guy that, can compete with Alan Lazard as a 2 and a 3. They need a bona fide number one wide receiver. Because we have seen throughout the NFL this year, if you have a key number one receiver, that's not always going to be indicative of success. You need that 1B guy that you can trust every game, every snap. And the name that I keep looking towards isn't Davante Adams, because I think he's going to be too pricey and there's no guarantee he's going to want out of Las Vegas. The name I keep turning to and I keep hearing is T. Higgins. Higgins is going to be a free agent. The Bengals could franchise tag him. However, if they franchise tag him, it's more likely that he's going to be traded because they still have to pay Ja'Marr Chase. They still have to pay a lot of these great players on the team, and they're in the middle of Joe Burrow's massive contract extension. There's not a lot of room for T. Higgins. Ja'Marr Chase said as much just a couple of weeks ago. He understood that the Bengals are going to have to make a very difficult decision this offseason, Higgins or Chase. And I think everyone expects Chase to be the guy that's going to stay there for the long term because of his relationship with Burrow. So if Higgins is going to walk, the Jets need to do everything in their power to go after him. I understand the love for Mike Evans. I understand the love for Michael Pittman. I think if anything, Pittman is going to be franchise tagged by the Colts because they have the cap space. And I can't see Mike Evans leaving Tampa Bay after a third consecutive division title. I just don't see it. I understand the affinity for it. I understand the potential that it could bring. But the fact that Tampa looked as good as they did this year with Baker Mayfield tells me that Mike Evans could just simply say, I want to retire a Buccaneer. And if that happens, you have to be able to pivot. The Jets don't have a ton of cap space as of right now. They don't have enough cap space for T. Higgins. But the beauty is they can restructure a lot of guys. A lot of guys are going to go on the open market, and you can create room to have plenty of cap space for Higgins and help the offensive line in the future. And the one thing, Scott, I know you're a little bit more down on the roster than I am. The one thing that I always turn to is the defense is still elite, and the majority of them are still under contract. They're going to have to solve the safety position. They're going to need some depth along the defensive line. But the Jets have shown an ability to find great defensive players in free agency on the cheap. Quinton Jefferson comes to mind last year. The problem is on the offense. They didn't do a good job with Alan Lazard. They didn't have a replacement for Corey Davis last year. But if you get a guy like T. Higgins, and T. Higgins is joining Garrett Wilson and Aaron Rodgers, now you have not just a great trio, but arguably one of the best in the National Football League.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Remains to be seen what the Jets are going to be able to do at wide receiver in free agency. No idea whether Mike Evans will be willing to leave Tampa, although it appears he's at least going to test the market. At least that's what he said. We'll see. I suspect, as you said, that both Pittman and Higgins are going to get franchise tagged. Now, whether that means either one of them gets traded is another story, but the Jets are short on draft capital, so if that were to happen, they'd have to get a little bit creative with it if they're going to also fix their offensive line. Because, Nick, the Jets now have the 10th overall pick, but they don't have another one until the third round. And with that 10th overall pick, unless they trade out of it, you would suspect that there's a strong likelihood they go offensive line. In his first mock draft, Jordan Reed of ESPN, who's one of the better draft analysts out there, has the Jets taking Olufoshinu, the offensive tackle out of Penn State. Now, we've got a lot of time to talk about the NFL draft, several months, in fact, and we still don't know a lot of information that is going to come into play in terms of medical, in terms of how guys test at the combine, workouts, interviews, all of that. There's a lot to come. I will say that, at least as of now, my friend Walter Cherepinski at walterfootball.com has said this on the show, in fact, but his guy Charlie Campbell, who's one of the best draft reporters out there, has said that he doesn't think that Fashanu is a lock to go in the top five. He might go closer to the back end of the top 10, which would match what Jordan Reed said. So it's possible he goes there. A guy like J.C. Latham from Alabama, big, powerful guy, possibility. It's a very deep offensive line class, so the Jets can get at least one starting caliber player, you would expect, with their first round pick if they move out of there, or if they use their third rounder and maybe one of their fourths to trade up into the second round. Maybe they get more than one, but there will be options. And as of right now, Jordan Reed thinks that Olufoshinu will be one of them.
Look, I love Fashanu. I really, really do. Gun to my head, if I had to pick between him and Joe Alt, I'd probably pick Alt because I think he's a more complete player. But going into the college football season, there were people that were considering Fashanu as the number two overall talent ahead of Drake May, ahead of Jaden Daniels, ahead of Marvin Harrison, because of his raw ability and his pass blocking prowess. Now he's going to have to learn the NFL. The training camp is going to be big for him wherever he goes. But ultimately, I do agree with that thought process from Reed. I kept looking at mock drafts. I kept looking at the teams and what they need going into the offseason, the pending free agents, the pending quarterback questions are going to be brought up. There is a very sincere possibility that we could see 4 to 5 quarterbacks taken in the top 10. Who they are will depend on the pro days and you know, the combine and different scouts and different conversations and all those meetings. And we're very far away from that right now. But if you get 4 or 5 in the top 10, that ultimately is the best thing possible for the Jets, because you still have Marvin Harrison. You still have the 2 tackles. You still have some very good defensive players on the board as well that teams will go up and get, because teams need defense in the modern NFL. There's a very strong likelihood that if it's not Fashanu, it's all at 10 for the Jets, and you may not even have to trade him. Even if they do, though, I think it's interesting to always point out, trading up isn't as bad from the top 10 if you're with the 10th overall pick. The prime example is last year with Philadelphia and with Jalen Carter. Carter fell to 9 with the Chicago Bears, and Philadelphia only gave up a pick swap, first round pick swap, and a 3rd round pick. So that's not really a lot of capital overall, and you can push that third rounder, if you will, to 2025 if possible. So there are ways that the Jets can be able to get one of the top tackles, whether it's Fashanu, whether it's Alt, that remains to be seen based on their preference. But people that were worried about beating the Patriots and losing out on the draft pick for the tackles, this was a best case scenario for you, because you stay in the top 10 and you end the streak to the Patriots last week.
Nick, two guys that won't hit free agency, since we're talking about guys who might, are Nick Bawden and Tanzel Smart, who were signed to reserve future contracts. I know that a lot of people who seem to care a whole lot about Nick Bawden's status when Aaron Rodgers, quote-unquote, cost him a roster spot, I wonder why they cared so much, they have to be breathing a huge sigh of relief, because Nick Bawden was their number one priority, had to make sure Nick Bawden was taken care of. He signed to a reserve futures contract. And Tanzel Smart, Nick, this has to be an NFL record for how many times a team has signed and released and signed and released a player, right?
It happens. It happens. You know, it's the difficulty of the professionalism of the National Football League. But they clearly like what they see in Smart. And whether he develops into a depth position at defensive tackle behind Quinton Williams remains to be seen. I know they really like him. They're very high on him. It's just a matter of if he can go out there and play at every level, and that's something that they have not seen yet to this point.
Nick, the NFLPA revealed its all-pro team as voted by the players. There were no Jets on this team. Now, remember, we're talking about the players voting here, so this is not the official list. That'll be done by the Associated Press. But I think if you were going to make a case for any Jets to be an all-pro, probably looking at their two best players, Sauce Gardner and Quinton Williams, you could understand why Quinton Williams wouldn't necessarily get the nod, because he was outstanding this year, but he didn't have those eye-popping stats that people look for when they try to find who should be on the All-Pro team. Sauce Gardner, though, I think got robbed here, and I think so did Jalen Johnson. Those two were as lockdown gets this season. Their coverage was incredible all season long, total lockdown corners, and yet the guy with the flashier stats, Deron Bland, and the guy with the reputation, Patrick Surtain, got the nod. It's not something I'm going to get worked up about necessarily, but I do think if anyone from the Jets should have been on this list, it's Sauce, and I think the players made a mistake here.
Well, and I'll say this. Players can argue that media have an agenda and they vote based on the agenda that they have. Players have an agenda too. Let's be quite frank about that. And I think the clearest example is this cornerback debate. I wouldn't argue against Deron Bland. I really wouldn't. His interception totals have been great. He's been a lockdown corner. Yes, he gets beat sometimes, but overall, I think he's a more complete corner than Trayvon Diggs was when Diggs was going for the record a couple of years ago. Bland has been sensational. Not arguing against him. The one that I always get uneasy with is Patrick Surtain. As great as he is, and he's a great cornerback, the debate between him and Gardner has been going on for a very long time now. And there are just some players and some in the media that just want to hang it to Sauce because of the lack of interceptions. And that's just not who he is. He's a lockdown corner. Surtain plays in a much different defense than what Sauce Gardner does. The amount of respect that the AFC East gives to Sauce Gardner, and the AFC East has Tua, it's got Josh Allen, it's got Bill Belichick. They all respect the notion that you can't throw to Sauce Gardner's side. They all understand it. I can't say the same for the AFC West. Surtain gets picked on a lot. And it's not to say that he's a bad corner, because he is still, the coverage grades are excellent. But it's just a matter of who do you want as your corner. And if I am asking 32 GMs, I would venture a guess to guarantee that at least 25 of them, which is the overwhelming majority, would take Sauce Gardner.
Nick, last order of business, a couple of news and notes from around the league. So we knew that there was tension between Giants defensive coordinator Wink Martindale and head coach Brian Daboll. We also know that Daboll has a history of being a little difficult to work with. Apparently, he didn't have the best relationship with Sean McDermott, the head coach of Buffalo, when Daboll was the offensive coordinator there. So apparently this all boiled over when Daboll decided to fire Martindale's two top assistants. Martindale, according to reports, cursed out Daboll and left the facility in a huff. It's assumed that whatever's going on, quit, fired, whatever, he will not be back. It's kind of wild. I know you've talked about your Philadelphia Eagles possibly making a run at Wink. I wonder if the Giants would have any standing to block that from happening based on what's going on. But just an incredible situation. And by the way, I think it goes without saying that if this was the Jets, everybody would be going crazy about it, because it's the Giants. This hasn't been as big of a story all year, even though we sort of knew about it, and it hasn't blown up the way that it would have if, say, Robert Saleh had gotten cursed out by one of his coaches, Nathaniel Hackett or something like that. So, crazy story there. Chicago has now fired both of their coordinators, Luke Getsy, who did a terrible job, to be fair. He is gone. I wonder if he winds up with the Jets, because he worked on the Packers staff when Aaron Rodgers was there, so maybe the Jets find some sort of role for him here, but he did a terrible job with the Bears. He's now out. I'm struggling to think of a situation where a coach fired both coordinators and was still successful. It does, however, seem that Matt Eberflus is going to survive in Chicago, because if they were going to fire him, I think they would have done it already instead of firing his two coordinators and leaving him there. So seems like Eberflus is not going to be out, but two guys that are out, they were kind of unexpected. One was very unexpected, but Mike Vrabel, not entirely unexpected, only because we had heard Josina Anderson report that the Titans were deciding what they wanted to do. Were they going to keep him? Were they going to try and trade him to another team? Were they going to end up firing him? In the end, they fired him. And it sounds like, according to reports, the big reason they did it is because they thought trying to trade him would be too complicated. Very bizarre situation. I would have held on to him and seen if I could get something for him, because he is a solid coach. He's got a good track record. I assume he's going to go somewhere else very quickly. It'll be his choice, probably, which job he wants. He'll interview everywhere. Will it be the Patriots, though? We don't know, because Bill Belichick is still there, at least for the time being. He's continuing conversations with Bob Kraft. He did say that he's willing to give up GM powers, final personnel say. Maybe that's the concession that gets Robert Kraft to come around and keep him. Personally, if it were me, I would keep Bill Belichick as long as he was willing to have somebody else do the personnel, because I think at this point, personnel man Bill Belichick the last few years has been getting in the way of coach Bill Belichick far too often. I still think Belichick did a pretty good job a couple of years ago with a rookie Mac Jones getting that team into the playoffs. And I would be hard-pressed to think of somebody that would be better than Belichick, even Mike Vrabel, the former Patriot. So we'll see what happens there. And the last one, this is crazy, Nick. Never saw this one come in. Guy's the same age as Bill Belichick, but there was never any talk of this. Pete Carroll, who, by the way, got his first head coaching job as the head coach of the New York Jets in 1994. He was promoted to defensive coordinator after they fired Bruce Coslett, who was the head coach. Carroll got the Jets off to a really hot start. They were 6-5 and playing the Dolphins for the division. They were destroying the Dolphins, up 24-6 at home, and then the infamous fake spike. Dan Marino faked the spike to stop the clock, ended up throwing a touchdown pass to Mark Ingram. He caught Aaron Glenn, who, in fairness, was a rookie, but still an outstanding player, even for a rookie, caught him napping, and that really turned the tide, and the Dolphins ended up winning that game. The Jets never won another one the rest of the year. They were 6-10. The Dolphins went on to win the division. Carroll was fired. They cited maturity issues and all of that. Went and hired a first-rate replacement, a guy that had an outstanding tenure here with the Jets. So they corrected the Carroll mistake with Rich Kotite. There you go. Pete Carroll, of course, went on to the Patriots, where he failed again, then went to USC, did fantastic there, got a third shot in the NFL with the Seahawks, ended up winning a Super Bowl, has had a very successful tenure there, a tenure that is now coming to a close because he is stepping away as the head coach. But he will remain with the organization, sounds like in some sort of senior advisory role. Never saw that one coming. So a lot of coaching moves here, Nick, and some very unexpected.
Yeah, I'll say the Carroll thing has been sort of the quiet noise over the last couple of days. People were wondering what was going to happen to him, and I know there were some rumblings that maybe he would step away, maybe he wouldn't. But ultimately, the fact that he did is completely stunning because I don't think it was him that made that choice. It was clearly Seattle, based on the conversations that Carroll had, based on his press conference today. It certainly seems like Seattle was willing to go in a different direction, and Pete was not. So I think that's going to be very interesting to see, especially if Pete wants to go out and coach again, because it sounds like, based on everything he has said, he still wants to do that. I'm not so surprised about the Vrabel piece. I'm still a little wary about what's going to happen with New England. The big one, though, has to be with Martindale and the Giants. I mean, no one is going to look at the numbers and say that Martindale did a good job. But he was excellent for that team and exactly what they needed. The big problem with the Giants this year was not their defense. It was the fact that they were decimated by injuries on the offense and just had inept play and inept coaching ability on the offensive side, kind of similar to what the Jets were going through. And no one's sitting here saying that, you know, Ulbrich needs to leave at this point. This was clearly a clash of narratives, a clash of titans, if you will, between Dable and Martindale. And clearly Dable being the head coach won out. But this is a very tumultuous point now in Giants history. Dable did such a great job his first year, turning around the team, making them respectable. And he did all these things, won a playoff game, put the Giants back on the map in football. Martindale was a big part of that because the defense was playing so well, even despite not having a lot of top talent. And then this year, injuries and all these things come up. And instead of sort of rallying the guys and staying true to his coordinators, very similar to what Robert Saleh did, Daboll is cutting the axe and making a lot of moves. Now, you can look at it two ways as opposed to the first way is, well, he's not satisfied with the results and wants changes. So good for him about making these changes now instead of waiting and sitting on your hands until the last possible minute. The other side to the coin is, wait a minute, you're a year removed from the playoffs. You mean to tell me the relationship with Martindale was so bad during your playoff season that it took one bad year for everything to just blow up in both of your faces? This is a bad look no matter what happens. And I think the interesting piece to this is the explanation of their contract has already come out. And this was a mutual parting of ways. The Giants no longer have to pay Martindale's $3 million contract, and Martindale can go to a place that he chooses. And the one place that everyone is circling right now is Philadelphia. Their defense is ridiculously bad. They've looked bad pretty much the last half of the season. And if Martindale goes there, that is a perfect blend of what the fans want, what the coaches want, what the team wants, the aggressive, defensive-minded, stalwart guy that is probably not getting a head coaching job, that's going to stay there for a while. All those things are going to come into play. the fact that Dable couldn't make this work is a bad look on him. And I agree with you, Scott. If this was the other way around and Sala made the decision to part ways with Ulbrich, this would be a completely different type of conversation. And it's not fair to the Jets, but ultimately it might cost Dable his job if the Giants aren't back in the playoffs next year.
Should also say, by the way, that with the future of Bill Belichick in limbo, one of his most famous proteges has decided to step away. Nick Saban is retiring from the University of Alabama. I believe there were rumblings about that this past offseason. Now it's official. One of the greatest coaches in the history of college football is gone. Wasn't quite as good at the pro level. Didn't do so well with the Miami Dolphins, but an incredible tenure with the Alabama Crimson Tide. College football will probably not be the same without Nick Saban. You can decide for yourself whether that's good or bad. Nick Faria, who covers the Jets and, of course, has his own show, Football with Faria. Great alliteration. Credit to his wife. I'm getting in on this one too, Nick. I want to be on her good side as well. I think everybody should want to be on your wife's good side. Thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. Make sure that you tell everybody how they can listen to Football with Faria or watch it, and also how they can get a hold of you on social media and check out your work.
Yeah, pretty much everything's on Twitter right now, of course. Nick_Faria 1720. I go live every day, hoping to go around between the hours of 4 and 5 p.m., staying on for about an hour at a time, talking about the top topics in the NFL, with obviously some more focus on the Jets and Eagles. It's a lot of fun. Hope everyone can jump on when they've got some time on their way home from work. And yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Still writing for Sports Illustrated. Still exciting time. Playoffs are coming, man. It's going to be exciting.
Check out everything Nick is doing and check out everything we've got up at playlikeajet.com and give us a 5-star review for the podcast if you haven't done that already. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. It doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts and content, you know where to go. That's Play Like a Jet Digital and playlikeajet.com.